You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Pat Nixon was an elusive public figure, the only modern first lady to never have written a memoir. And her only biography, Pat Nixon, The Untold Story, was written by her daughter, Julie Nixon Eisenhower. But for Ann Beattie, much of the story has remained untold. Perhaps that's why she's decided to fill in some of the gaps in her own way with Mrs. Nixon, A Novelist Imagines a Life, which manages to be as much about Mrs. Nixon as it is about the craft of writing, and the author struggles to encapsulate a woman who seems to have been largely marginalized. The book is published by Scribner. We're very pleased it has brought Ann Beattie back to our show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
On the first page of the book, you include a quote from a member of President Nixon's staff that Joe McGinnis put in his book, The Selling of the President, 1968. The staffer said, "Next to her, RN looks like Mary Poppins." That would suggest she was tough. Did he explain why he'd said that?
Well, I think she was withholding. That is a form of toughness in a way, but I think she was very hard for people on her own staff and certainly on his staff to read. You know, it was interesting to me that many times people who disliked her, such as H.R. Haldeman, omitted her from schedules. Her staff had to do a lot of fighting to even have Mrs. Nixon included.
Well, what do you think that she was withholding because that was her personality, or that was just the way she... The defense she had developed as the wife of somebody who was prominent in politics?
Well, certainly it was clearly rooted in a defense system. And as we all know, she begged him not to re-enter politics. And there were times when he did lose an election or whatever and promised her that he would not go back and then did go back. So she was repeatedly hurt in terms of the kind of life that he told her she might envision that never materialized. You know, but the other part of your question is interesting, and I'm not a psychologist, and I really don't try to...
But as a writer, you try to get into people's heads and their psyches.
It kind of scared me that I thought I did kind of get into her head. But, you know, without meaning to condescend to Mrs. Nixon, because really I don't. She interests me very, very much. I think that she was so much a creature of her times that the way that we might be able to communicate with each other now and how intimately we might talk with relative ease was never something that was available to her even generationally.
You say that Mrs. Nixon, when she was first lady, was someone you dismissed as interchangeable with a Martian. That's quite harsh.
Well, I was quite harsh.
You just felt she was from another planet, a creature from another planet?
Well, I felt she did have that kind of robotic quality, you know what I mean? And that was part of the defense system, too, that we were talking about. I do think it was extreme in her case. In other words, you could certainly be a person who wished to be in the background and not comment and not quite look as exactly cookie-cutter cutout as Mrs. Nixon. I think she overdid it. And in a way, of course, that is a way to keep people at arm's length. If you look so impeccable that they dare not approach you, many will not.
What got you thinking about her as the subject for a work of fiction after all these years?
I didn't have direct political intention. In other words, this is not a disguised tract in any way about politics, writing about Mrs. Nixon. But thinking about the Nixon years has just never stopped for me, and I think not for a lot of people. And, you know, he's reconceived, or he certainly tried to reconceive of himself as the elder statesman and so forth. But Mrs. Nixon, we never needed to conceive of her as being more complex than she was. But you're right, the writer's interest is... Well, don't we need to think about anybody that way? Why look at the major figure when you could look at the minor?
Well, have you ever wondered about the inner lives of other mysterious historical figures?
Can't say that I have.
But she just seems to be the hardest to read.
Yes, and I do think I had something of a personal reaction to her in terms of there have been other presidents I haven't been crazy about. But Richard Nixon was really the one that my generation and I were hopping mad about, you know. So by extension, I also really didn't like Mrs. Nixon. You rethink those things when you're a woman of a certain age. You just do.
Well, you write that in fiction, the marginalized person's point of view is always informative, and that writers tend to love people who volunteer very little. Did her elusiveness give you a lot of creative freedom?
You know, hypothetically, it would have, but I wasn't trying to fill her out fictionally. In other words, I wasn't trying to make guesses about her. I wasn't really trying to do something that was a stream of consciousness, you know, about Mrs. Nixon. One distinction I would make is that the difference between stream of consciousness and an internal monologue. So she thinks, for example, that Mrs. Nixon reads about the young Nixon in Life magazine. That really factually happened. She had the magazine. She read the article. I do think, so therefore as a fiction writer, I think, what might her thoughts have been? But I stay within her vocabulary. And that's the difference between the internal monologues I use versus free reign as a writer, in which I could have made her, by using different language, anything I wanted to.
How much did you get from reading Julie Nixon Eisenhower's biography of her mother?
I actually got quite a lot from it. Not much has been sorted out with the kind of chronology that Julie Nixon Eisenhower gave to that. And she also had access to notes written between the Nixons. It's very personal. She puts forth a lot of documentation in the book, and I often use the documentation that she had researched as my point of departure.
And what do you think she was trying to say about her mother? What kind of a person was she trying to give the world?
I think she thought something different than what I think. And, of course, she was her daughter, so she had every reason to think it. But that was that she was not a great mystery. And she does lay out facts about Mrs. Nixon's life. I personally did not know that Mrs. Nixon had ever acted, that she was, you know, the lead in her high school play, that she was in community college productions. That's, in fact, how the Nixons met. If you can believe it, Richard Nixon was also trying out for a role with the Whittier Community Players. I mean, how bizarre is that? So that's how they got together that many years back. But
well, he was loose and so natural, I'd imagine.
You think so, do you? I want to write a book about you. It all boggles the mind. It all seems very strange. But nevertheless, I do think that the idea of acting that was really always there in the background can't be overlooked.
So you think that she was presenting a persona to the world?
Yes.
Like an actress would.
Yes.
Yeah, is it significant that the title of the book and the way you've just referred to her is Mrs. Nixon? You didn't say Pat
Absolutely.
Nixon.
No, you know, I wouldn't even presume that intimacy. But Mr. Nixon himself didn't tend to say my wife even very often. He would say Mrs. Nixon. So it was as though somebody was determining her identity from outside. And again, with the combination of what kind of a guy he was telling his staff what to call her and the reticent person she would be very happy that she had the automatic protection of being Mrs. Nixon.
Was Patricia her given name?
No. Thelma Catherine.
In fact, the first chapter of the book lists 11 names that she was called over the course of her life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the historical record?
Yes.
Did each of them allow her to take on a different identity?
Well, you know, she hoped so. In other words, when she changed from Thelma to Patricia, and then, of course, that got shortened to Pat, they're three very different names if you think about all three of those. I mean, as a fiction writer, I would not conceive of a character named Thelma and later change that name to Patricia. I would be thinking about a different character if that was true. You know, I would know that from the get-go. So some of them were, but her code name with the Secret Service, which is how that list ends, I thought was very interesting. I don't know if she got to pick her own code name or whether it was assigned to her.
My guest is Ann Beatty, whose latest book is Mrs. Nixon, A Novelist Imagines a Life. And you fantasize about actually meeting the Nixons at one point, imagining what it would have been like to have had them over for dinner. Have they taken on lives of their own in your fictional characters in the back of your head?
To some extent they have, but again, even though I do mobilize them and I do write dialogue about scenes that I could not possibly have been present to observe or something like that, very often in the book I have a refrain of saying, you know, the fiction writer's interest would be. So in other words, I'm not only trying to read their minds, but I'm saying, reader, please read mine. Please
in fact,
see what mine.
Sometimes you can't decide on what you want Mrs. Nixon to say, so you include several possible responses.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fun. So this is also about the act of writing and creating characters.
Yes, and I think it's also about something that I've thought about for a long time. It's all over my fiction, really, so it doesn't seem that radical a departure, which is the difficulty of knowing anyone. I mean, very often what I write, while it may not have a, you know, the kind of traditional plot that many things build toward or whatever, does have as a refrain the fact that something's missing. There's a missing integer somewhere in that plot that's going to catch up with somebody. And I find that was true with Mrs. Nixon, too.
You switch narrators throughout about the book. You've even written yourself into it. But why do you devote so much of the time in discussions of literature? There are references to Chekhov, Tolstoy, Tennessee Williams, Joan Didion.
Well, I'll give you an example. One example is that I did find out from Julie Nixon Eisenhower's book that Mrs. Nixon gave a gift before they married to Mr. Nixon. So it may have come from Patricia, come to think of it. But it was a collection of Maupassant's short stories. And I don't know, I can't really imagine Richard Nixon reading Maupassant's short stories. But even if I'm wrong, and he did read them, he wrote her a letter saying, you know, these are the best stories the world has ever known. Well, that would suggest to me that somebody hadn't read the book I gave them, if that's what they had to say, you know. But I just, as a game, really, take a traditional story by Maupassant, analyze that story, and without being didactic, I hope, let the reader see the parallels between that old-fashioned story and what is to come in the life of the Nixons.
But in the case of the Nixons, I think a lot of people have tried to imagine what their life was like more than what LBJ and Lady Bird's life was like. We can kind of figure that out. But in the case of the Nixons, well, first of all, you talk about them being in this theatrical thing together, but then they didn't see each other much, and then she turned him down the first time that he proposed.
Right.
He sent her an engagement ring through the mail. I mean, these are
things. He had a messenger take it over, but she didn't know she was getting it, and she, you know, he was not present. You're right. I mean, that was not the way to deliver the engagement ring. Yeah.
You get down on your knee and you say, Pat, will you marry me? There were rumors at the time that she even wanted to get a divorce before he became president, but that they came to some kind of agreement for her to stay for political reasons. And that would have made sense because until Ronald Reagan, no person who'd been divorced was ever elected president.
Yes. Well, how interesting if we had a record that that was the case, though. I mean, there were many things that I heard. I was in Washington, D.C. at the time. You know, that's my hometown. So there was always a lot of talk and a lot of, you know, quasi-believable talk, as you'd hear journalists talking and so forth, who do tend to be in the know sometimes, give a lot of credibility to what you hear as a rumor in Washington a lot of the time, I think. But I couldn't substantiate that. I don't know that she ever thought that. I mean, maybe it is that common sense would tell us that if the relationship was that bad, that might have been a thought, and it might have been why she became so withholding. But I don't know that.
On the other hand, many presidents have told us that their wives are the best advisors. Do we have any sense about whether they discuss politics together?
I can't say really substantively what it was that they discussed, but for example, she lobbied long and hard and in front of other people, not just as pillow talk, to have a woman on the Supreme Court. And she didn't prevail with him, but she certainly made him uneasy. She certainly kept after that.
She kept a lot of her private life hidden from the public. For instance, she was a heavy smoker who developed emphysema later in her life, but she's never seen smoking a cigarette in public.
Yes. Well, you know, again, it was a different generation in which it almost looked ultra-liberated. It almost looked masculine if you were a woman in the 50s puffing away on a cigarette. It just now, of course, nobody's supposed to be puffing away on a cigarette. That's quite true. But she wanted to be as discreet as possible.
Is it easier to boil her down to adjectives? You include many in the book. Practical, neat, actress.
Well, I do, but I hope that the cumulative effect of the book is also to say that, you know, underlying those kind of general concepts, which I don't think are wrong. In other words, she was very neat. I don't have any information that she put on a fright wig, you know, and ran around in her sweatpants on the weekends. I don't have anything like that. And not interested in making her something that she wasn't, you know. But certainly nobody in their private moments could have been exactly what she looked like in her public moments. It's too extreme.
You not only have them over for dinner, you also invent dialogue between her and other famous people. For instance, there's a scene where she's baking cookies with Hillary Clinton.
I couldn't resist.
Is it easier to put her in context when she is contrasted with another first lady who we feel we know better?
Well, that was not so difficult for me in a lot of ways because, number one, I was amused by the notion, so I was playing a little game with myself. And as we all know, Hillary got into more trouble than she should have for making a perfectly logical remark about not wishing to be, you know, the perfect little lady who stayed home and baked cookies or something like that.
And then she had to bake those cookies.
And then she had to bake those cookies, yeah. And who was, Ronald Reagan had to apologize apologized for saying he didn't like broccoli, and Mrs. Reagan had to claim she ate it for three meals a day. I think it was the Reagans. I can't even remember.
No, it was George H.W.
Was it H.W.? Okay. I really try to put these things forward, not just in a fanciful and speculative way, but in a way that might open the issue of thinking, what underlies all this? Is there some serious component that underlies all this?
And about halfway through the book, you write several letters from readers of the book to yourself. Was that meant to preempt the responses that you thought you might get?
Believe me, you can't preempt the responses you get. I could never outguess some of the reactions that I get for what I write.
And have you gotten odd reactions to this book?
No, I haven't. I haven't gotten letters in the mail to this book yet. I haven't.
Do you feel more of a connection to Pat now, or at least more sympathy for her?
Yes, I really do feel more sympathy for her, certainly, and not just that many sad things happened to her in the course of her life, but that she made a decision that still seems very curious to me, and I try to jump the generation gap and the philosophical gap and everything else between us, and I still wonder how she could pay the price for making such an uncompromising decision.
Ann Beatty is one of our best short story writers. She has been included in four O. Henry Award collections and in the Best American Short Stories of the Century. She is the Edgar Allan Poe Professor of Literature and Creative Writing at the University of Virginia. Her latest book is Mrs. Nixon, A Novelist Imagines a Life. It is published by Scribner. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.